Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Untangled Resolution's presentation of Sangoma, bringing you compelling stories from the front lines of mediation. I am your host, Batavi Libntombeni, and I'm coming to you live from Brooklyn, New York, where I am happy to join my guest today, story specialist Pamela Jackson. You are listening to a piece by Valerie June called Rain Dance. Sit back, relax while everyone gathers. We'll be back with you in just a moment. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this first broadcast of Sangoma, which is offspring of Untangled Resolution's presentation of The Problem is the Answer. So if you're a regular listener who was listening to last season, you're in for a number of changes that I've made to the show that I hope that you will appreciate and enjoy. The first of the changes is to the name, and that's one of the biggest changes. And I'm here with my guest, Pam Jackson. Hi, Pam. Say hi.
Hi, everyone.
And I'm so excited to have her as my first guest. She so wonderfully encapsulates what I'm talking about when I talk about a sangoma and the relationship between sangomas and mediation, which is what the show is about. We're bringing you stories from the front lines of mediation. So let's talk a bit about what the name means and why I chose the name. Many healing traditions around the world recognize that the mind and the body are not and cannot be separated, and the community a person lives in also contributes greatly to an individual's well-being or lack thereof, right? So the Sangoma tradition is one of them, and the word Sangoma is a Zulu word, and if I'm mispronouncing it, to all of y'all, Z, especially my cousin out there who often listens from South Africa, please forgive me and go ahead and send me a Skype message or something to let me know to switch it up a bit. My mom and dad might be listening as well and cringing. What have we done? But the Sangoma tradition is one of those traditions that is truly about healing the whole person. And there's a description of what Sangomas do. Excuse me. There's a description of what Sangomas do that I found in an article on a website called Enza. And I'm going to make the link to that article available on the blog for the show. So I have a separate blog for the show that's going to contain and does contain articles or write-ups of guests, background information, interesting links that I think that you will enjoy. This particular website is called Enza, as I said, and the blog's name is untangledresolutions.blogspot.com. That's what I'm trying to get at, is the address where you can find the blog for the radio show. Now, the author of the website entry is named Judith Elaine, and she quotes a woman named Heidi Holland, who wrote a book, so it's a quote of a quote, right, called African Magic. It's a book called African Magic, and she notes that sangomas play an important role in everyday affairs. She said they are described as mediators, often preventing internal arguments, healing the wounded souls, motivating recovery through the community. Sangomas spend a large amount of time soothing their clients while sorting through the layers of suspicions and doubts that are linked to jealousy, rage, and accusations. She says that the sangoma's function is vital to maintaining order and fluidity amongst members of the society. And that really is a role that it describes what mediators, I think, at the greatest potential of mediation has to offer to communities.
Yes.
Right, absolutely. In your experience mediating, what have you experienced in that regard?
Well, I really love what you're saying about bringing healing to communities and societies. I think, I see my role in mediation as in terms of the healing aspect, healing one's past to their present.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, and we may get into this more in the show, but we can see our past as fat that gets in the way of our present. And a lot of times, though, our past experiences are impacting how our relationships are going, how the choices that we're making in our relationships, the kind of character we're bringing to our day-to-day life. And my role is to really be a bridge in terms of my mediation of standing in the middle of the past and the present for an individual that's interested in looking at how their past can absolutely serve their present. If they look inside of it and see what data is there inside of those experiences to increase their insight and their decision making for right now.
So it really allows people to see their past rather as being something that weights them down and keeps them back, as a well of information that actually can propel them forward.
Exactly.
Wonderful. You've talked about storytelling and you call yourself a story specialist.
Yes.
And I was especially curious about why you've chosen that to describe what you do.
Well, a story specialist, it means that I use the moments that have happened in our lives as a means to discover insight and improve our decision making. My work is not just for sort of nostalgia sake. It's here to really show that our stories have exactly what we need for in terms of information to lend itself to the present. And specialist meaning, I really love it, looking at the moments that have happened in our lives and finding the patterns in them that can really serve the information and the intelligence we have about ourselves right now in our relationship.
So it's one thing to be able to tell stories. I mean, family members we might have who are fantastic storytellers.
Yes.
Children love to hear stories told by their parents and grandparents and so forth. You go a step further and you take the stories and gain or draw utility from them.
Right.
That adds to or to a person's being able to heal and to restore relationship and so forth.
Right.
Okay. One of the things that I'm excited about is the fact that you, beyond being a storyteller and a mediator, are also a trained actress, is it?
Yeah. Trained is a little stretch. I happen to just really, really love the stage.
Yes.
And I got some training as a young adult in Maryland and in Washington, D.C. area as a performance poet. That's actually how I met the stage and really in a safe space with this community called Soli Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just a group of young performers who were poets and were being given the space to tell our stories at 14 years old. You know, you could think, what's going on in a 14-year-old's mind? Lots.
Wow.
And fell in love with the stage at that time and really let it go once I came to New York and just focused on fiction and nonfiction and memoir writing and returned to the stage after doing this conflict resolution work with my mother.
So you haven't just returned, and we'll be talking about that conflict resolution work with your mother, but you haven't just returned to the stage. You've also created your own work. Tell me about your work.
My work with the show, with Jim.
Yes.
Well, yeah, Jim's it's based off of the conflict resolution dialogue called the mother-daughter. And the birth of mother-daughter was from, a death in my family.
Mm-hmm.
my grandmother, who was the classic matriarch, that's the classic matriarch in a Black family. She was that, but she was also really the mediator of our family. She stood in as the glue for my mother and I, and kept our relationship existing for the little bit that it was. It was because my grandmother kept us in trying to engage each other. So when she died, there was this huge chasm, this huge gap that was all the more evident. And I felt like, you know, I've got to honor my grandmother by making an attempt to try to have this relationship. So I called my mother one day, and she's talking to me, and I'm not listening to her. I mean, her words are just going by in a blur until I just blurt out and say, you know, I need a relationship with you. I need a new relationship with you.
Yeah, I was wondering about what had prompted you to do that. I can imagine if you've had a contentious relationship, and actually, why don't we go ahead and talk about how you grew up and about your grandmother and the influence of your grandmother. And I guess having that background will help folks to be able to really understand what GEMS is all about.
Sure.
So tell me about your childhood.
Sure, I can veer into that. I grew up in my grandmother's house for the most part, and she had a role in her professional life that required her to be the face and the voice in every institution she worked in. And she worked at Channel 50. She worked as the secretary for the late Ron Brown, congressman, who ran for presidential candidacy. And you know, was always the central node wherever she went. But folks relied on my grandmother because she was an amazing communicator, and she made you feel safe. That was it. You know, she was a...
So you felt you could say anything to her?
Oh, my God, yes. My grandmother was truly my best friend. Mm-hmm. And that may sound odd to some folks, but she really filled in all the nooks. And I could describe her in this way where she could sit with me inside of the corners and myself and really witness the darkest places in me, witness me at my peak and still be there. So her guidance taught me how to really relate to other people, and no matter what walks of life they're coming from, how to make them feel safe and meet them where they're at.
I can imagine folks might think that you're saying your grandmother was your best friend is a little strange. I mean, you mentioned that folks might be surprised. And I'm thinking it might have to do with the general generational difference, the age difference between the two of you. But it seems that she was able to bridge that anyway.
Yeah, with her humor, you know, with her relatability. My grandmother was this sassiest talker ever.
Okay.
I mean, she was sassier than my friends. And, you know, we're like young girls, and my grandmother could just talk around us.
Oh, goodness.
She had great jokes, and she just made sure that everyone felt like they could really be who they are around her.
Mm-hmm. And your relationship with your mother was very different.
You know, it was. My mom, you know, was a woman who was being resilient through all of the pain that was still going on for her in her life before I was even born, you know, still surviving that pain. And I say that, you know, she was a wounded woman who then kind of passed on her wounds.
To you?
To me, definitely. And so, you know, it was a very tumultuous relationship because of that, and hence my grandmother stepping in and being that glue.
How old were you when you went to live with your grandmother?
I was 7 years old.
Okay. So it seems then if there was a decision for you to go live with your grandmother, things had been happening that prompted that move.
Yeah.
What was going on?
There was domestic violence happening in my home when we were living in Decatur, Georgia, and my mother sought a safe place for us while she tried to seek safety for her own self.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandparents were living a much more stable life, of course, in Maryland, and so she relocated us there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so she came to your grandmother as a place of refuge as well.
Right, absolutely.
Right. So when you talk about your grandmother as the mediator in the family, the glue, you know, that I'm getting a much clearer picture of that.
Mm-hmm.
So then did you grow up with your mother being in the house the whole time?
Yeah, you know, my mother worked nights. And this is what I mean about the resilience this woman has had. My mother has been phenomenal at you know, going through all of this darkness and still taking care of business, raising three children. And I want to say by herself, financially it was by herself, but really, you know, you know, the support of my grandparents came in. So my mother was around financially, but that required her to work nights. So she would work the 9-to-5 shift that was 9 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Oh my.
Where other families had a 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. parent. So my grandparents were there in the evenings for us.
And in many ways, then I guess it was that your relationship with your mother is like ships passing in the night.
Correct.
To quote an overused term, but, you know, it's descriptive.
She would come home at 6 in the morning, and I would know she was home by the smell of breakfast she was cooking for herself. And then she would go to sleep when we were getting up and going off to school, because that was time for her to go to bed. And then I would come home in the afternoons and see her just coming out of her sleep and getting herself together. But it was a short pocket of time between about 2 and 4-ish, you know, that I had my mom.
Well, you describe your relationship, though, as being less than optimal.
Yeah.
And yet I'm hearing from you that you never really saw each other.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there are weekends. And there's just that time in between, you know, working and her just being in her own world, where the anxieties around just raising 3 kids on your own, essentially, working nights, there's just a night schedule alone. I'm really sober to what that does to an individual, which is, it's really a schedule most people don't understand and can't relate to, but it completely flip-flops your life and your ability to relate to others
it can leave you exhausted.
Well, I mean, that's where, you know, the tiredness and the anger and a lot of yelling and all this going on and just her not, you know, knowing us but not really knowing us, because our lives were passing like ships in the night, as you put it. So yes, there was, you know, my mother, there was a lot of irritability and it came from many sources, which of course I did not, you know, discern at the age of like 8, 9, 10 years old. So there's marks from that anger that I knew was much older than me and much bigger than me. But comes out when you're a single mother raising kids by yourself,
and of course,
and having to rely on your parents to help.
Right, and of course, as children tend to take on responsibility for the behaviors of their parents. I know, for example, children who are going through a process of divorce in a family will often blame themselves for the parents' decision. Wonder, well, if I were a better kid, you know, perhaps they would have stayed together. It was my fault. I wonder whether you might have experienced a similar thing with your mother.
You know, I didn't. And that may have come from her wise choice in placing us in a home with our grandparents, who were, you know, by the time we were coming to live with them in their 20th year of marriage or 25th year, you know. So they were that sort of nuclear representation of a family. And because my grandmother really did step in as mom, that picture sort of was complete in that way. I didn't experience that, but I did know that my father was not there. and I didn't know exactly why we had left, but I knew we felt safer where we were. And then just the residuals of that unknown story coming from, you know, the many tears I saw from my mother that I didn't know where the source was, but I saw the pain. And then she, you know, she really, really, really tried to fill that gap with church. So, you know, the Christian religion was a big part of my upbringing and really one of those sort of parental sources. My mother kind of had God step in as father, really, and would gather us in prayer circles, and we would be taught by her how to pray to God. And she's always told me, you know, Pam, I gave you guys over to God a long time ago. And I remember, and she, it's wonderful because the way that she tells me this moment, it's so crystal clear in her mind, like a moment she could just see exactly where she was. And she must have been, I don't know, in some living room or somewhere. And And she tells me exactly what she said to God. I just told God, I can't do it. You've gotta take over. Not that she would leave, but that she was giving our futures over.
Right. But being a single parent is a monumental task. I don't know that anybody really does it absolutely alone, as you said.
Right.
But even then, if it seems that the resources are really that scarce, often people will look to a higher power and say, listen, I'm going to have to give this burden over to a higher power. And it sounds like this is what your mom experienced herself.
Yeah.
Do you have a relationship with your father?
My father has, he's deceased.
He has passed away.
Yeah. Okay. I was 16 years old when he died.
Oh, I see. Wow. Mm-hmm. And you'll have to excuse me. I have to clear my throat. I've had allergies.
Oh, that's fine.
Which is really, I'm not used to having this this quality in my voice. I try to pass it off as, you know, smoky and mysterious, but really, I feel like I have to kind of hack, you know. So I clear my throat.
But you've
described this relationship that you had with your mom that you said was often tense and said sometimes non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
You've got this marvelous relationship with your grandmother, and also you described a bit of your neighborhood in the information that you gave me, when we were communicating before the show.
Yeah.
Talk to me about your community.
I was really privileged culturally growing up. I live in a block called Ivorhar Street in Wheaton, Maryland.
Okay.
And my home was in between, there was a Jewish family next door. There was a Latin American family across the street. There was a Russian family three doors down. There was a family that was practiced Jehovah Witnessing around the corner. We just had a very eclectic block, and I was in all of their homes. It wasn't a high and by kind of neighborhood. You went in and you smelt the way their cooking smells, and I got $7 for every A I got from.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. You know, any young people who are listening out there, that's kind of a racket you got
going
there.
For every O. We had O for outstanding and N for
U
for unsatisfactory or something.
Did they take money back for the U?
No, you didn't get any money for a U.
No, but, I'm thinking on the other hand, they could make you pay up.
That's true. No.
Good thing they didn't think of that.
There was not that kind of hustle going on, but they're hustling off elementary school kids. No, but I was really fortunate because my grandmother's professional life already exposed her to all these different kinds of cultures. And she taught us sort of a kind of diplomatic etiquette in the home of how to relate to people, and no matter whether you understood their background or not, but how to be even interested in it. And that's one of the ways you relate to people, is showing true interest and respect and allowing yourself to be taught by being inside of a different kind of world.
Right. Well, so you're living in this neighborhood, exposed to many different people. As a matter of fact, one of the things that jumped out in the description that you gave me of your upbringing was you talked about having responsibility for your culture or taking responsibility for your culture. Tell me a bit more about what you meant by that.
Responsibility. I think just being able to...
For accountability, actually, is the word that you use.
Cultural accountability.
Cultural accountability,
Yeah, I mean, that just comes, that comes by way of being, placing yourself in environments where you can experience other cultures, which honestly, it has to be a will that there has to be a will there, because we can so easily operate in our bubbles of same race, same gender, same sexuality, I think that my grandmother and just the environment that I was raised in helped me to be interested in other walks of life. And there's the accountability that comes in, because when you're entering a new kind of cultural space, there comes a time when you've really got to drop your own experience in order to be able to not only fully absorb the other, but to not color what you're seeing through just your own lens, right? That's where the accountability comes in.
And, that is so key for mediators.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about mediators as practitioners, when I go to mediate, often I don't know who I'm going to be mediating with, and I think that's a common experience for mediators. We are trained to be able to walk into any room with any group of people, and the goal anyway is to be able to accommodate the needs, the interests, the desires of all of the people who are involved. And so it sounds like this experience that you had growing up with this neighborhood really helped to shape you and form you into somebody who's capable of doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you've described this lovely relationship with your grandmother, who sounds like this wonderfully amazing woman, and eventually she passes away. So how old were you when she passed away?
This was in 2009.
Okay.
So I was 27.
Okay. So you were 27, and what kind of impact did it immediately have on your life?
It was funny because the immediate impact was that I grew utterly silent to my own mother. I was talking to her a little bit before my grandmother had died, and at their funeral, I told her, please go away. this is real talk. I felt that I had lost my mother, and the mother that I wanted my mother to, the mother that I wanted my mother to be was gone, and the mother that I actually was born to was coming to console me over this loss, and it was, it just felt all too paradoxical and contradictory. And so I didn't even reach out to my mom and try to comfort her over the loss of her
own
actual mother.
Mm-hmm.
That was really what took place. She lost her mother. And I did not acknowledge that until about a month after the funeral. And I acknowledged it through, it was actually through a friend of mine who has since passed away, but I was on the phone with this friend of mine. Her name is Tracy James, and we were conducting once a week calls to each other, checking in with a structure we called Two Highs and One Low.
How did you come up with this? I mean, this is amazing to me.
Sure, yeah. Well, I really, really believed in and still believe in talk therapy. And accessing the resources that you have for healing, the resources that you have all within you, but right in front of you, and that being by way of friends. And so I had learned about the struggles that this friend was going through. I learned about her journey online and wrote her an email saying, I really believe in just talking. Do you want to talk with me once a week? We can talk about, and Two Highs and One Low. I don't know where I've got that from, but I just thought, it comes from how I believe I'm bred, which is to the principle of bringing the past and the present together is a gesture towards how I believe I'm made to sort of occupy two worlds at once. I'm a sort of reverend of paradoxes.
Reverend of paradoxes.
Just being able to see the marriage, that something that seems to be two things that seem to be opposing each other, the marriage that they actually have, and so dark and light, high and low, and always bringing those seemingly opposites into one breath, into one conversation, because they always are speaking to each other. So, the good things that have happened in your week and the bad things that have happened in your week are actually really seamless and needed each other. And if you speak about them together, there's a greater opportunity for sort of holistic healing.
Okay.
So I thought, let's talk about what's gone well and what's not gone well. And we started doing that. And my lows were always my mother.
Interesting. And there's the beauty of having a process like this,
right?
Having a ritual
right.
like this, right?
Right.
It allows you to be able to then see patterns that otherwise would remain unseen.
Exactly.
and untouched.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm a firm believer in structure for communication. It really serves the human being, even though I'm a talker, I love to talk.
Yes.
But when it comes down to trying to move forward over an issue that I'm wrestling with, structure is really the only way to actually move forward with it. It creates a space where you can, where you're being handheld by this, by the process, to be guided to what's next, and not only to what's next, but to what's best, what's best, what's next, what's best. So Tracy and I had this space for each other, and we held it. And one night she was saying, "You know, you're talking to me. You should be talking to your mother." I called my mother that next afternoon and said to her, "You know, Mom, I need a new relationship with you." And she responded saying, "You're right. I agree."
Was appreciative of the structure. She
exactly.
wanted to, the structure. And you talk about how she recognized that without a structure, without some kind of a change in the way that you were communicating, you would just be doomed to repeat the old pattern.
Right, right. Yeah, we would only talk around the problem, not to it. Even if we had an intention to really get to core, it's so easy to simply talk around what's really happening. And the procedure, you know, if we built it according to the honest intention we have, which is to get to it and through it, then we would actually do that if we followed a process.
Right. And I'm eager to talk with you about that process, how you developed it, what the process looks like. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll pick up the story where we've left off.
Great.
And I'm excited to hear about what you and your mom were able to come up with.
Awesome.
We're going to hear a piece from one of my favorite musicians. His name is Brandon Ross, and folks who've been listening understand that he is, you know, one of my favorite musicians. He's really awesome. He also happens to be my guitar teacher, so, you know, he has a special place in my heart. The song is called "If You Come to Me," and I thought it was particularly appropriate considering the conversation that we're having.
Great.
It's from his album called Puppet, which is available online at iTunes, and I will always say this, I encourage folks to support independent musicians and buy the music, folks, buy the music. It's available on iTunes. As I said, the album is called Puppet, If You Come to Me. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you come to me, open and young to me, with no appointment, nothing in hand. If I sing to you all that I bring to you in the quiet, no other I know.
Hello, everyone. We are back on the air. This is Batabile Mtombeni, and I'm your host of Sangoma, bringing you stories from the front lines of mediation. And, you know, it's funny, I actually failed to introduce myself.
Oh, yeah.
I just noticed that. So, shall we do that?
Please.
I am a mediator myself, and I have a real passion for mediation. I love doing it, and I love the potentials of it. You know, what it can bring to people. One of the things that I point out in my blog is I'm sifting out, you know, how do we bring mediation to folks who perhaps haven't experienced it and are really clueless about what it means. It's an opportunity for folks to address material issues, yes. You know, there's a disagreement about something. Often there are material issues at hand. It also allows for folks to address the impact that a dispute has had on them in a way that doesn't often happen in more formal settings, like in court, for example, or at an arbitration and so forth. You know, your feelings are not necessarily relevant to the case, whereas in mediation, they can become sort of central.
Right.
And often I have found that it isn't until those needs have been met, the need for acknowledgement, the need for perhaps an apology, a need for common understanding. When those have been achieved, or when those needs have been met, then folks can very easily deal with the underlying material issues. You know, it's rarely really about the money.
Right.
It's about the relationship. And so I have a real passion for mediation, and I want folks to learn more about it. I still have situations where I will put up on my Facebook status update that I'm running off to mediation, and folks will be like, I'm glad you're meditating.
Right.
Meditating is good for you. And I'm like, yeah, it is. but I'll be back from mediation in just a bit. You know, it's this show, I'm hoping, is a real opportunity to bring mediators and the general public together.
You know, it's funny.
Understanding of it.
Yes. I mean, I think that mediation is, it's actually, it can be like a meditation.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You know, so you understand that connection.
Exactly.
Of having a process that allows you to reflect.
Right, exactly.
It's a reflective process.
And you're so wonderful. You're giving us a nice segue into what we're going to be talking about in this next section. But I have a little bit of housekeeping to do.
Yeah.
First of all, if you are listening online, you can also call in. The phone number to call is 818-532-9789, and if you'd like to ask Pam a question, go ahead and dial 1, and that will give me a signal on my screen that says that you would like to be heard on the air, so we invite you to do that. I also want to tell you about the show's availability going forward. So let's say that you hear the show, and you're like, my sister's got to hear this show, but she's not available to listen right then. The show is going to be available in perpetuity, right, online. People can come to the website, and it's blogtalkradio.com/Batabile, which is my first name, and it's spelled B as in boy, A-T-H-A-B-I-L-E. And there you'll have access to all of the shows from last year as well as going forward this year. You can also download the shows to iTunes, and that's really cool because then you can upload it onto your smartphone, and perhaps you want to listen to the show while you're riding the subway, or if you're driving, you want to, you know, plug it in somewhere. And so you can listen to the show at any time that you want to, so it's really convenient in that way.
Great.
I also want to let folks know that this is an opportunity for you to showcase your events. I'm interested in letting people know about opportunities for building community through community events. So if you have an event that you'd like me to feature on the show, go ahead and send me an email at info@123untangled.com, and that's untangled with a D. So that's how you can reach me. You can also go to the blog, which is untangledresolutions.blogspot.com, and send me a message there and enjoy the articles and so forth that are there. I'm also always looking for guests for the show. So if you're a mediator who happens to be listening and you would like to talk about your work, give more insight into your work as a mediator, I'm being a guest on the show. So again, info@123untangled.com is the way to reach me. And that's about it. I'm happy to hear from you. And we want to come back to Pam and talk process.
Okay.
So you call your mom,
right,
and you say, I want a new relationship with you. And she agrees, but she also has the insight, the foresight, to say, hey, we need a process for doing this. And you had your friend with whom you had the two highs and one low process, and so you're used to kind of doing process. And you've come up with a process, but I'm also curious about how your background and training informed your ability to work with your mom to create the process that I will be talking about. I understand that you do work in oral history, and is it mind mapping?
Yep.
Tell me what that's all about.
So the oral history training happened through my master's in fine arts at Sarah Lawrence, where I was studying some oral history and had an amazing opportunity to go out and just interview strangers about their lives. And
kind of like what I do.
Yeah. No,
it's fun. It's tremendous. I have such a good time.
I'm sure you do. I love this notion of giving someone the platform to just talk about what happened. Jerry Alvarelli was a professor that I worked under, and he's a well-known oral historian in New York City, and really led the way in 9/11 and getting oral history interviews with tons and tons of survivors of 9/11. You know, Jerry would talk about, you know, just let him talk. Ask them, what was their mother's favorite dress? And you would not believe all of the other stories that would come out of an individual when they started talking about their mother's red, flary dress, or the block that they grew up on, you know, which you asked me. And I went, oh, I see the rest of the family. And, you know, and I see all these colors. And so that fascinated me because, you know, I actually grew to fall in love with it when I had one specific interview. And this was with a woman I went to college with, to undergrad with. And I didn't know her really at all while we were in school. We happened to have a mutual friend. And this mutual friend told her, you know, Pam's doing interviews. And do you want her, you know, to be interviewed? And I initially did the interview with her because she made wooden rings with her partner. And I was doing this project called Things. And, you know, this under the idea that things are what keep people together and things are what break people up. So from
interesting.
Yeah.
That dual potential.
Right. Right. Literal things, though. Like sometimes a photograph is what causes the breakup of a relationship. Sometimes a pot of spaghetti is what brings a couple together. And I had learned these things would come out of the interviews, and that's not only how I would discover them. And I knew this about this friend of a friend before I even interviewed her, that, oh my gosh, she makes wooden rings with her partner. So I was so excited to sit down with her. I'm like, the thing is going to come up. We didn't even talk about that at all. We ended up talking about all the things she lived with because her mother's a hoarder.
Wow. And you did not see that coming.
Not at all. But I saw the living room that she had to walk through when she was in the hallway, and in this path, this one pathway she would describe her mother would create for them to be able to navigate through the house while everything else in the house was piling up beside them while they walked past. I was so blown away, but it's also why this particular friend is an amazing fashionista. She used to have such great fashion because her mother would hoard clothes and, you know, antique and vintage. So duality. That was amazing. Right, this duality. So anyway, that made me really fall in love. But it was not just, you know, learning about this part of the friend that I didn't know. It was how therapeutic the process ended up being for her. You know, she talked about things she had not talked about with anyone. And we had this nice little recording of her in her own voice telling herself her story. And that's what I saw worked so well. You give someone the platform to just talk about their own life. And suddenly they start, inside of the storytelling, giving themselves answers for things that they didn't even know they either had questions for or that they even knew that they had the capacity to answer for themselves. I love the oral history tradition because it just it really is hinged on what my work is hinged on, which is about you having the answer within yourself. So
the
that
problem
was
is the answer.
And
it was exactly.
The problem is the answer.
Right.
Perfectly connected. Right. So that connection, and then mind mapping. I had been invited to go to a weekend retreat called Compassionate Listening and Mind Map Guide. And compassionate listening is actually a training that's taught by one of my mentors, who is an amazing mediator for the Israeli and Palestinian conflict.
Yeah.
Her name is Rachel Aaron Kalish. She is the founding member of Workplace Connections, based out of San Francisco, California. And Rachel leads the compassionate listening and led it that weekend training, and I fell in love with her teaching. But then she also taught it alongside a man named Charlie Hess, who's been doing this mind map training. And Charlie, it's a practice he's been doing for over 20 years, and it's just alongside of, you know, outside of the work he has as a CEO of this company he runs. The mind mapping is a spiritual breakthrough tool that he uses for individuals that are interested in, who are going through this space of sort of a gray area or making a transition in their life and not knowing what's next.
Can you give me a quick example of how it works?
Sure. So you sit down in front of a poster, a blank white piece of paper, big white piece of paper with crayons and markers, and you're given the space to just, you ask, you know, what's up, what's going on? You listen, and then the guide is listening to the mapper. Really, the mapper is the one that's going to navigate this whole process. The guide is just going to hold space for them and ask them questions along the way. It's about a 1.5 to 2 hour space you spend. And in the answering of the question, what's up, that the guide asks, the guide is doing this deep listening. And what's up could start from, oh, my nail polish is red today, and go, you know, into, I'm afraid I'm going to cheat on my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Or I cheated on him.
Right.
And that's my past, and I don't know, I'm in this new relationship, and I'm afraid I'm going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have this history of it because my mother did it, and I'm afraid I'm going to be just like my mother. And, you know, and the sort of conundrum that people find themselves in with the person they want to be and the person that they find themselves being right now because of the conditions that are tied to them in the past experiences they aren't letting go of. So the mind mapping just gives you the space where you start to just, you write out, well, show me your mother. And you capture it in an illustration, some kind of picture. Or a symbol, or just her name. And the process goes on, and you sort of, as the guide helps in synthesizing all these images. So that process was really helpful for me in seeing the worthwhileness and really naming it, putting a face to it, whatever that memory or experience
was. Making it concrete.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, and literally a tangible evidence of what's going on in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to try to draw connections for it and next steps.
Right.
So that was a big influence in the process for me and the crafting of the process of my mother and
I. And I want to come to that. I see that we have a caller who has a question, and I'm going to ask you to be a little bit patient. I want to be sure that we get to hear about this process that we've been talking about. So why don't we do that first, and then after that we'll come and take the question from our caller. Okay, so hang in there. We're coming to you in just a moment. Tell me about this process.
Sure. So it's a 90-minute guide that actually can go from 45 minutes to 90 minutes, and it's 14 steps. And it's called the Mother-Daughter, and it's a two-party conversation guide. meaning there is the steps that the process outlines is the mediator.
Oh, that is interesting. So that frees the people to have much more agency, I suppose, right, in how they use the mediator, but they have this tool that's available to them.
Correct.
Okay.
So the process is the governing body, and the process is what you use to then you sit down with someone who you have a difficult moment that you've experienced with, but you want to work through the moment and you want to keep the relationship. Now
desire, that is so important, right? You talked about authenticity. I think you didn't use that word, but that's what came to mind when you were talking about it, about a sincerity,
yes,
in wanting this to work. I mean, if you're not sincere,
it's non-existent. Key factors outside of having a process to follow and the steps and sort of a scientific medium to help guide you through the problem, you have to have the will. My mother and I found that we could not successfully do this work unless we were both willing to. That was number one to step into the space with, and the other was our highest intention for having the conversation, knowing really why we wanted to show up to it, and you know, and being transparent about that why, and that's actually how we started out. Every process, every session begins with you stating why you want to do this work, why you want to have this particular moment talked about.
So you choose a moment.
You choose one moment at a time.
That was painful.
Yeah, usually the moments are moments specifically that what I call are stuck to the emotional bodies of that we carry around with us, and. And, you know, my mother had hers and I had mine, and some of ours were the same. But we began the conversation, right? Actually, before we began the conversation, there was past intention prep work where you just ask yourself, why do I want to do this? Why do I want to do this? And you enter the conversation, and it's one, yes, it's one moment. We choose a topic for that moment and then describe the moment. And it's interesting because through the work, I found that it's so key to have an image you share that you're both looking at. That's what the moment acts as. We specifically would describe what happened without any ideas or interpretation or feelings. It was called just the facts.
You just walked into facts. My room and woke me up.
Right. And, you know, the session that I will share with you all that really helped me see this process as something that I really needed to share with the world was the process, the session on my father. I chose it, and the moment was when we left Decatur, Georgia. I have a crystal clear, sharp memory, which my mother sometimes loves, sometimes hates. So I was 5 years old, and I could remember the night.
Still, it's that sharp for you.
So I completely described every inch that I could see of it, and to her, just the facts. And we entered this dialogue about what happened, why we left was my question. You know, where was all of these tears that I had seen after we left, and what was the need to have a safe space? All of that coming from, and. You know, you think you know what you're doing when you say I'm willing to work through a problem. But I was so humbled. I was so humbled by the gaps that she filled in for me that some of it was maybe none of my business, you know, to know as there's a role that a daughter has. And I don't want to subscribe, not that I subscribe to sort of, you know, archetypal dominant society, the definitions of roles, but my mother, you know, and I said this in the last performance of my solo show, Gems, and during the panel discussion, that she is and was holding a space of that was so huge that I could not fill. And what I encountered was listening to a story of a woman who was bearing the experience. And for me, just listening to it was so hard. Imagine the person who's living it, and just the level at which my compassion expanded. through this process, the level at which it taught me to grow in understanding, grow in my perspective, grow in being able to see that this person before me is not just my mother, but this woman. So it helped me to really be able to see an individual outside of the sort of myopic way that we have been relating to each other as mother-daughter and recognize a human being. And what my mother can attest to, because we have fully grown through this process, and what she has said so eloquently, we saved 20 years and 11 months.
Wow.
But what, you know, she's really been able to help me see how you can have a space with someone where you are allowed to be who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, you know, I'm sitting down with you and you're a talk show host and you are a mediator and an amazing woman. You wear all these different hats, right? But imagine being in a space where you could show all those hats and then take them off.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Right?
And just simply be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that really is without all those hats.
Right.
And imagine being able to do that with someone who you want to not only have a relationship with, but have one that you have one with for the
regardless.
Rest of your life.
Exactly. Right.
So we both experienced that. You know, I at my 20-something-year-old age and my mother at her older age. And it was quite amazing to remove age even, because all of those sort of, you know, these normalities or these things that we use to attach our way of knowing a person, title, age, occupation, were shed. And and we really were sort of naked before each other through the process. So that, you know, in that conversation about my father, I knew, wow, we've reached a kind of freedom that I always felt maybe existed. You know, you don't really know something exists until you're actually standing in it, and then you see it's bigger than what you thought it could be, and you couldn't imagine it. And I thought, oh, wow, I really want this to be shared.
And so now you've come up with this mother-daughter process. Listen, we have a bit of a challenge here that I run into with the fact that I've decided to keep the show to 1 hour, which is that we are running out of time on the show itself. However, a beautiful thing about Blog Talk Radio is that we can continue talking and it will record. So what I'd like to do at this moment is bring in the callers so that they're on the line. For everybody who's listening live, in about 2 minutes, the show may cut off. It may, you know, sound like it has cut off. We're going to continue to talk, and it will be recorded. And if you'd like to hear the remainder of the show, then feel free to come back. It will actually be available within an hour or so, and so folks can come back and listen to it. And you can even fast forward to the part that you've missed. And then, of course, folks who are listening from there on out, see, we got our 90-second warning. People who are listening from there on out will hear a seamless version of the show. So let's bring in that caller. I want to acknowledge that moment, the idea that you have shed all of the titles, as you said, and age and so forth. You talked about your mom telling you things that, you know, as a daughter, you're not sure, am I supposed to know this about my mother? But then you're able to recognize her as a woman, as you are a woman, and experience one of the really core parts of mediation, one of the core features of mediation, which is compassion and empathy.
Exactly.
You know, recognizing the other person. And it's when that happens that the amazing shifts occur that allow disputes to then be resolved.
Exactly.
So let's bring in the caller. And please first give us your name and then ask your question or make your comment.
This is Lynn Kanukin calling from Long Island. I actually didn't begin with a question. When we picked up after break, it sounded like your talk was moving forward before I heard about the rest of the mother-daughter process, and I wanted to ask if that be continued. That being said, this is the most amazing program.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for this and for the reminder. I would have forgotten when I saw that. I got right on. I'm at the Association for Conflict Resolution. I'm the editor of the Crisis Intervention News, and I certainly share the empathy, the giving someone space, I think it resolves all those subterranean things that get in the way of really resolving whatever the first appearance of the problem is. But all that being said, thank you so much. This is a remarkable program.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in and letting us know. You know, we sit here. I'm actually in Pam's home, and I try to broadcast the show from the warmth, the place of warmth of each of my guests. And so we don't necessarily know who's out there, and it's wonderful for you to call in and give us this encouragement and an acknowledgement. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Please keep me on your mailing list.
I certainly will, and you've given me an opportunity and reminded me, folks who are listening, you can follow this show if you go to that webpage that you're looking at. There should be a button that you see there that says follow. We'll ask you for an email address, and that will allow you to receive reminders of when the show is going to air.
That is splendid. I'm glad these sessions will be on in perpetuity. I'm going to click off now with my thanks again.
Well, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
And come back again next week.
Count on it. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Bye-bye. Oh, well, that feels so good.
That's great.
That's wonderful. That's really awesome, and I'm really grateful that she called in and let us know.
That was beautiful.
And you have been so amazing.
Thank you.
And open, and that's, you know, that is so key. And I think you're a wonderful example of what you hope that folks who are following mother-daughter and some of the other processes that you've developed will be able to do. So
absolutely.
Tell me more about how now you are sharing this process that you developed with your mom with other people.
Right. Well, you know, one of the main techniques of my work is homebred, and that is turning the self out as a means for allowing others to feel absolute permission and safety to do the same. Vulnerability is what heals and resolves conflict. And so what I do is, you know, I've taken two to three sessions that my mother and I conducted during the mother-daughter process and adapted them into a one-woman show.
Hmm.
It's called Jim.
Right.
And it debuted in August of this past summer in 2011. And has
congratulations.
Thank you. had four productions since then. And the latest production being at the New School. I did a performance of it at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe about 2 weeks ago.
Awesome.
Which was really great. Yeah. It was really great. It's got some more invitations to be performed and directed, so it'll be coming out. And the show is part autobiographical, part fictional. And so I have a character based on myself, a character based on my mother, and a character based on a former lover of mine. And that is because doing the sessions with my mother, it showed me some of the resounding themes she and I share. And it was funny because it kind of started to track both of our coming-of-age tales, which are very similar. We've made very similar choices in men, in our views of God, and our treatment of self. And I wanted to show that through this one-woman show and really also use the my love for the stage as a means for showing how conflict resolution can be worked out in a relation, how it can be a tool for a relationship. So I show the sessions happening, and it's sort of a, you know, schizophrenic kind of technique. I've become
playing all the parts.
I play all the parts. I play them all in one breath, and it's been applauded in terms of my ability to transform so well.
Tell me what people are saying about their experience.
Well, I mean, it's been so encouraging because after the performance, I create a talk back space or a workshop and allow people to be able to be broken off into three groups. The groups are named by the characters. And, you know, walking past and hearing people say, you know, my father never loved me, I feel. And hearing this from, you know, large grown men who you're not sure are connected or really listening, and then they're opening up and telling their stories, or at the last performance at the New School, hearing individuals talk about the steps towards vulnerability that they've taken by journaling and then going back to those journals. and seeing the stories they've had to work through within themselves, and or the stories that their children have had to work through, because I have mothers, of course, that come to the show. And one of the greatest experiences in terms of responses of the work is having a mother who was about 8 months pregnant with her first child come to one of the performances and come up and tell me, you know, I really needed this. I'm getting emotional right now. you know, I've been thinking about how am I going to talk to my daughter, who's by that time to sex, my daughter about her father.
He wasn't around.
No. He's, you know, not the chosen partner. And how, you know, how am I going to address this seemingly gap? And just, you know, just people's real stories surface and they tell them, which I think is a sign of the work. And really kudos to my mother because she really leads the way and has led the way for me in honesty. Showing, and then through, you know, I said through my childhood, yes, I saw lots of tears. Yes, there was pain and anxiety and stress and my mother, but all of that was seen. And what I mean by that was, you know, she was a human being going through life, and you saw that. It was not hidden. It was not closeted. Whatever she was going through, neither was her joy for the times that I saw it. So, you know, I just, I want to thank her. Huge thanks to my mother. But the work is you can see it on storyistelling.com, which is a space where I bring all those services that I offer through my work. I have a one-on-one session that's a personal storytelling technique, which allows you to take a moment that's happening in your life and be able to see a moment that has happened and what side and inside of that moment that's already happened, what's the model of success? Actions that have worked for you already that you can reapply to the present.
So you're not reinventing the wheel. You
have the answers.
Already have the answers?
Right.
You know, I want to ask you something. Well, actually, I want to make sure that folks who are listening understand how they can access the work that you're talking about. So if you could tell us the website again.
Sure. Is storyistelling.com.
Okay. And through that, folks can contact you. And then also use the resources that are there and available to them.
Yes.
I want to backtrack a little to something that you said about an audience member. And you mentioned a man, perhaps, that you had heard as you were walking by. And he said, you know, I felt my father never loved me. And I don't know whether you intended for that to be a past tense statement. But one of the things that stood out for me when I was reading the information that you sent to me is that this process allows people to heal relationships with the dead.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So the mother-daughter dialogue can be done with two parties, but also can be done with the self.
Yes.
So one of the discoveries that we can have when we're doing work with others in relationships that we want to keep is that relationships are mirrors. They're really just a reflection of you, an opportunity for you to see yourself.
So that person that you have real difficulty with serves a certain purpose. Tell me about that.
So the person, you know, that you're struggling with, whether they can speak or not to you and to the problem, the problem that's happening is always an opportunity for you to really see yourself. So it's possible to do a session with yourself about that person who's passed. And it's a one party session and you are the party, and being able to just examine yourself and through a series of questions and also a little bit of role playing. You know, if it's a person who you're in a relationship with, you're likely able to sort of try on their perspective and switching of a hat from you to them. And it's a little bit of schizophrenic.
but often used in mediation as well.
Absolutely.
Sometimes when I'm mediating, somebody has said something, I will ask the other party to tell me what they heard.
Right.
And perhaps to tell me, based on what they understand is going on for the other person, what might they suggest that they do?
Right.
You know, so embodying empathy
right.
in that way and having
right.
to actually act empathy.
Exactly. Exactly. That's totally what it's for. And when you act in empathy, there's so much increased awareness that happens in that moment because you're trying another mentality. And then you, because of that, you're seeing life through a different lens, which then allows you to see new choices you didn't actually see before when you were just in your own perspective.
Hmm.
And so the new insights then come out of that moment.
Wow. Wow. This has been so powerful and tremendous, and I thank you so much for being my first guest.
Thank you so much
on the show, being a show that is, and you're welcome. Being that it's a show about story, this couldn't have been more perfect. I was thinking about how I would close, and I want to go to something that you wrote in the information that you gave me, talking about how you describe the work that you do, and you say, I lead others to lead themselves to their own motivated and improved work, relationships, and self-awareness. And you talk about holding a moment still. What you allow people to do is to hold a moment still and apply questions to it that come from deep listening and a belief that the answers are within us
right.
and within our story.
Right.
That is so important.
Right.
Oh, Pam, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been
my
really
pleasure.
Nice.
Yes. And thank you, everyone, for listening and for joining us. Please let other people know about the show. The more, the merrier. And we are going to be back again next week. I will have information about my guest up and available on the blog by tomorrow. And also links to next week's show will be available by tomorrow. So, be sure to check in at untangledresolutions.blogspot.com. Blogspot, of course, is blogspot.com. And to find out what's coming up and to find out more about Pam's work, I'll have links to her website. There is an awesome trailer for her Gems show that is available there as well that you can see. All right, everyone, we're going to call it an evening, and I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite pieces, again, from a favorite musician of mine. His name is Vijay Iyer. He is Grammy-nominated. I'm so proud of him. And he's a fantastic pianist, jazz pianist, and composer, and the piece is called Black and Tan Fantasy from his album Solo, which is also available on iTunes. So have a wonderful week, everybody. Share stories with each other. Happy healing. We will be back again next week.